Welcome back to season three of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, it's been a minute.
It's been a while. I'm rusty. I'm scared. I don't remember how to speak. I'm glad you said our names at the beginning because I wouldn't remember them otherwise.
Yes, exactly. For context, we recorded two episodes before Jason went on a very nice, but also very threatening holiday.
Yes. It was the only vacation I've ever gone on that had like evacuation notices in the area around me. Not the area that I was in.
Yeah.
But I was briefly inside Hurricane Ian.
Damn.
Sitting in a hotel room, not particularly in danger, but Disney World was closed. Yeah. So my fun was threatened, but physically not really me.
But you only kind of lost one day because you were closed for 2 days, but you actually gained a day because your flight was delayed.
Yeah, so we were able to, like, because flights got messed around, like the airport was closed when it was coming through, because apparently, now this is news to me, planes can't really go through hurricanes. They kind of just wait till after. Built different. I was able to go outside while the hurricane was there. So me versus airplanes, I'm winning that matchup 10 times out of 10. But yeah, we were able to use one of the days that was lost. The other day, I am grappled in a never-ending combat with Disney.com trying to get a refund. I don't like my chances. Me versus Disney, 10 out of 10, it's probably Disney winning that one. So in the rock, paper, scissors of this, airplanes have to beat Disney somehow. I'll find a way. If I don't get a refund, I'm finding a way.
Well, on your holiday, did you do any other watching? Because the last two episodes, we actually didn't do really any other watching. So we got some catching up here to do.
This time, I did.
Hell yeah.
When we stayed inside for 2 days, thanks to the hurricane, we watched a bunch of Disney movies. Nice. It was lovely. We started off, even actually before the hurricane, we watched a couple. Notably, we started with Lilo and Stitch.
Classic.
Which is a movie that I assumed that I had watched all before, but the more we watched it, the more I realized I've never seen this movie before.
Weird.
I think I've only seen the start. It's pretty good. It's not my favorite Disney IP, but it's fun. I forgot that Stitch is kind of a little bitch for most of it. I kind of thought he became lovable earlier.
Right.
But he's kind of just a little mayhem agent for a while, but it was okay.
Yeah.
Not my favorite Disney movie, but still a very solid one. I know why it's so beloved.
Yeah.
After that, we rewatched The Incredibles, which goddamn holds up. I forgot how much is going on in that movie because it's not just a fun superhero movie. It deals with a lot, family issues, superhero issues. You know, the world's coming to an end, but are there relationships and bonds as well? No, it gets saved. Mr. Incredible pulls it out again. But it's really good. Like, the animation is not great. Like, it doesn't hold up.
Yeah,
whatever. The story itself is so strong that you could keep rewatching that and not care. Like, it is a really well-written story with, like, fine enough characters that doesn't matter.
Cool.
The Frozone, though. So funny.
Yeah.
The best line that may have ever been written in movies is, I need it for the greater good. And then Frozone's wife saying, I'm the greatest good you're ever going to have. Fucking killer. That's unbeatable writing. Goddamn, I laughed again, knowing it was coming. Yeah. It was one of those moments where I said the line out loud with it and then laughed at it. So good.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's good. After that, in the marathon, we watched Up, which I had never seen before.
Really?
I had started watching it in class one day. Don't remember what grade, why. It was probably one of those like last days before the school year was about to end kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we only really made it through the extraordinarily sad part because you're only watching it for upwards of 30 to 40 minutes. Like, we never even saw them. Like, the house took off with balloons when we watched it in class, but never landed. Never actually made it down to Paradise Falls. So this was a good set of closure to an open wound that had been there for God knows how long, only seeing the most heart-wrenching parts of it.
Nice.
And it's such a lovely movie.
It is like, really
it's
good.
It's so moving. I teared up a number of times watching it. My girlfriend and I, we just sat there crying, watching Up. It was great. We also watched Jungle Book, which is one of my favorite Disney movies as a kid. I love Baloo, the character, so much. The tune's absolute slap.
Yes.
Bangers. They're so goddamn good. And that holds up. Although you can't think about the underlying message too much because I have a feeling that it's quite problematic because it's about how They shouldn't be mixing humans and animals. And I think you can draw some larger conclusions from that, that maybe you don't need to draw those. Ignore that it's probably from a bygone era of Disney writing. And it's just a fun romp with humans and animals. Mm-hmm. No political leanings whatsoever and a great soundtrack.
Yeah, it's good. I haven't returned to that in a long time.
Yeah,
I might have to go back.
The songs hold up. That's what matters. It's still every song's a jam slam. I think that was probably it.
Yeah.
What about you, Kyle? What have you been up to?
Because it's been so long, and even last episodes, I had seen some things that I didn't talk about. So for new movies, I'm just going to try and like plow through this so that I don't get too bogged down into one particular spot. But I've seen Barbarian, The Woman King, Bros, Hocus Pocus 2, and Werewolf by Night. Those are all like kind of the 2022 things that I saw. Really liked Barbarian. Wild movie. Just like
really
crazy. Like pretty much the consensus is going not knowing anything and you're going to be fucking just like
blown away.
Yeah, blown away. Like it's like it's one of those with that just like you can never anticipate where it's going, which is perfect. It's like that. That's exactly what you want for like a horror thriller. So yeah, I recommend that. The Woman King, also very good. Maybe a little bit long, but it is kind of like a historical epic that also has some really badass action scenes. And I understand why a lot of people are loving it. Viola Davis is great. All the other actresses that are in there are really great.
Now, is A Woman King one step above a girl boss? Or is that two? Because both have been upgraded.
I would say yes.
Yes, Viola, you would say.
I mean, they're both. Like, yeah. Viola Davis is the Woman King girl boss. Like, she's got just all kinds of strong energy that I was there for. Bros, also very good. I saw it with my mom, and it was a very quiet theater because I hear that a lot of people are not going to see it. And I can kind of understand why the marketing was pretty bad. It's like hard to tell who it's for, but it is still a really funny and heartfelt movie. And I found it pretty accessible despite not being gay myself. So yeah, it was good. Werewolf by Night was the kind of like Marvel Halloween special that I really enjoyed. It was a lot of fun. It kind of riffs on old classic horror movies like the 30s Dracula. It was kind of just about these like hunters trying to hunt down this monster. But then there's like a monster within the hunters and there's like good stuff going on. It was a lot of fun. And it's like short. It's like an hour, like under an hour. It's 55 minutes. So
beautiful. That's such a bold thing. And I love it.
Yeah. So that was really good. Otherwise, I did rewatch Alien and Aliens. Molly and I have been
I love the Alien series.
They're great. Molly's been kind of dipping into horror a little bit more, but like she doesn't like the spooky stuff in terms of like ghosts and shit.
Yeah.
But like she can handle like slashers and the alien like sci-fi type horror, which
interesting.
Yeah. So that's another thing that I was like, she's like, because I can't prove that the supernatural stuff isn't real. That's like where her logic is, but like yet a man with a knife who's coming to kill you, that's okay because like that's not realistic.
No, okay. Maybe I'm wrong here, but if I had to think of all the different genres of horror from like people with weapons, aliens, and the supernatural, you'd think the supernatural is the least likely to occur. If I had to put money down, guy with sword, that's just like a lot of news stories. Aliens, mathematically, I'm liking the chances somewhere.
Yeah.
Ghosts, I think the jury's the most out on.
But anyways, I don't know. I'm not going to argue with it. We've been watching some stuff. So she really liked them. And obviously, like you've just kind of said, like they're so good. Like
so good.
Alien and Aliens are like, they're kind of like light years apart in terms of what they are.
Yeah.
Like Alien is very contained thriller horror type thing. Whereas Aliens is more of like an action type movie, but both are still like so good on their own. And I love rewatching them. My favorite line in Aliens. And it was like when you were saying that with Frozone's line, you just say it out loud while you're saying it. But when Ripley is like geared up in the suit and the alien queen is there and it just zooms in, it's like, get away from her, you bitch. And I'm like, yes.
Oh, God. Fucking girl boss power king woman.
Love that moment. Also, I didn't mention this, but Hocus Pocus 2 was all right.
Oh, yeah. That's what I assumed on that one.
It was
one.
Just
kind
of fine.
It's Hocus Pocus 2 itself is like, it just conveys the idea of it was probably fine.
Two more things. We've watched Friday the 13th. for the first time. The Ridge.
Yeah. Okay.
With Kevin Bacon? I didn't know he was in that.
But, I didn't know either. Yeah. I couldn't told you that.
Yeah, it was funny because Scream ruined for me that it's not Jason in this movie. Like, Jason's not in the first one. But Molly didn't know that.
That's a really fun reveal the first time. It's almost even more of a misdirect when you know the series and then go into it versus people watching it for the first time. Because now you assume that because this monster does actually, like, it's a fun psychological thing where you're almost how the people are, where this beast exists, but it's not actually that beast. It's his mom.
So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, like, I probably would have been more surprised if I hadn't known, but it was kind of fun still just watching it. And like, obviously it's very dated, but it kind of has the tropes that people use in like modern slashers now. And what Scream was riffing on was like, you know, that this is like where some of those things were coming from.
Yeah.
And so in some ways it feels cliche, but the other times it's like, well, this is where the cliches kind of came from. So So, and it was good. It had good kills. Like, it clearly used its budget. That's very low budget very well.
It does.
So, I enjoyed it.
Now, was this also your first watch?
It was my first watch. Yeah, I haven't dipped my toes into anything Friday the 13th before, so I'm excited to kind of go through. Lastly, I watched season one of The Bear, which is a really good show on Disney Plus. I had been kind of hearing little things about it, but it's basically about a classically trained high class chef who's working in like really fancy French restaurants, who gets kind of pulled into his brother's sandwich shop, like classic Chicago hole in the wall sandwich shop, when his brother commits suicide. And so he's kind of being pulled into there and trying to like fit in with the culture that was already there and change it to be more of like a structured restaurant, and also trying to figure out how his brother was running this thing and like why his brother even left to him, because it's also sort of emotional history. And it's really good, and it's really short. It's like 8 episodes, and each are like half an hour to 40 minutes.
Oh, wicked.
So it's, I breezed through it in like 2 evenings, and I would really recommend it. Yeah, it's a good time.
And good memes have come from it. Mm-hmm. That's a sign of a good show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it though.
Oh, yeah, man, we've done a lot of watching, including this movie. I stole your transition.
Damn. Yes. Of course, season 3 of Snubs and Doves has been covering the films from the year 2001. And so for episode 10, we are talking about the next Best Picture nominee this season, In the Bedroom. I don't think either of us have seen this or had probably even heard of it before.
It is shocking how little of an impact this Best Picture nominated film has had, because it was a little hard to find. I mean, also, if you just type up In the Bedroom, there is going to be legitimate other search results that like come from that. It's not like you put in some unique name to find it, but it still was down there. And I only found it by doing In the Bedroom a bracket movie or In the Bedroom a bracket 2001.
Yes.
So it does not have a lot of name recognition.
Yeah. And like the only thing I knew about it really was the actors that were in it. And honestly, I didn't really know much about that other than that Marissa Tomei was in this. And then I looked at the poster. I was like, oh, Tom Wilkinson and Sissy Spacek were in it. And I was like, cool. And then so I kind of just went in, except I was telling to you when we went to, because we went to a hockey game the other day before we recorded this, that the trailer actually ruined one of the kind of bigger moments in this movie for me. We'll get to that in a second. But if you were interested in this film or the short story it was based on, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you bought through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder, this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen In the Bedroom yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it. In the Bedroom is a 2001 American independent drama film directed by Todd Field and written by Field and Robert Festinger, based on the 1979 short story Killings by Andre Dubas. This was Todd Field's directorial debut, but he has another movie coming out this year, Tar, which is getting some early Oscar buzz, especially for Cate Blanchett. This stars Sissy Spacek as Ruth Fowler, Tom Wilkinson as Matt Fowler, Nick Stahl as Frank Fowler, and Marissa Tomei as Natalie Strout. It has a runtime of 131 minutes and it released on November 23rd, 2001. Jason, what did you think of In the Bedroom?
You know, I've thought about it continuously since watching it, trying to figure out how I feel about it. And I think, to encapsulate everything, it is good, it just has no staying power.
Yes.
I was interested in watching it when I was watching it, but as soon as those credits rolled, I had moved on.
Yes. Absolutely. It is kind of one of those classic movies we get every season, especially that are Best Picture nominated. I'm thinking like Shine and like The Theory of Everything. Mm-hmm. That just kind of like you're present while watching them, but then once they wrap, they're gone. Like,
yeah,
like it becomes hard to talk about them afterwards because they left such little impact on you
mm-hmm.
that like it doesn't really stay. And there's a reason why people don't talk about this movie really anymore.
Yeah.
Because like it is a good movie in a sense, and obviously it was good enough to be nominated for Best Picture. First of all, it is kind of an actress movie.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
That's pretty much what it is. Like it is Tom Wilkinson, Sissy Spacek. I'm going to say that name wrong 100 times.
That's okay.
Spacek and Marissa Tomei kind of showcase. That's pretty much what this is.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's like a classic kind of revenge drama sort of thing. And mm-hmm. I don't know. It just didn't really resonate with me as much.
Yeah, I think it just has a very limited caliber quality of screenplay and writing, where if you have worse actors doing it, it is a bad movie.
Totally.
But because actors give a really good performance, it's very competently made.
Mm-hmm.
I understand exactly why this got nominated for Best Picture and also why this never had a chance of winning Best Picture.
Yes.
Like this is just such a stepping stone movie for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It will probably get some buzz. I am assuming there's some acting nominations for this one. And I don't think anyone's going to really look back on it much in their repertoire when they need to like do any kind of review on their career. Even actors, even if they won for this,
yeah,
they're probably more like, I am now an Oscar winner. Mm. I don't need to say what movie it was for. The Oscar win was more important.
Yes, exactly. But should we get into the plot?
Let's hop into this plot.
Jason is going to read straight through the plot. If you don't need the refresher or you don't want to know, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's In the Bedroom.
In the mid-coast town of Camden, Maine, Matt and Ruth Fowler enjoy a happy marriage and a good relationship with their son, Frank. That's never a good intro. A recent college graduate who has come home for the summer. Frank has fallen in love with a divorced older woman with children, Natalie Strout. Frank is about to begin graduate school for architecture, but is having second thoughts and considering staying in town to continue working as a fisherman, and more importantly, to be near Natalie and her kids. Natalie's ex-husband, Richard Strout, tries to find a way into his ex-wife and children's lives, going to increasingly violent lengths to get his intentions across to Natalie, including assaulting Frank. Ruth is openly concerned about Frank's relationship with Natalie, while Matt thinks it is only a fling. Frank resists Ruth's insistence he report Richard's violence to the police, but neither she nor Matt call them either. Frank rushes to Natalie's home after receiving a frightened phone call from one of her children. He arrives to find the living room trashed and Natalie in distress. She tells him Richard just left and pleads with him not to call the police, but Richard returns almost immediately, still in a rage. Natalie takes the boys upstairs and Frank insists through the locked front door that Richard leave. He feigns doing so only to break in through the back door and kill Frank with a handgun. Though equally devastated, Matt and Ruth grieve in different ways, with Matt putting on a brave face while Ruth becomes reclusive and quiet. Richard is set free on bail, paid by his well-to-do family, and both Matt and Ruth are forced to see him around town. The couple retreats with friends Willis and Katie Grinnell to a secluded cottage for a weekend. But Ruth is distant, she rarely contributes to conversation, eyes Matt's drinking suspiciously, and sleeps most of the ride home. The next Saturday, Matt tells Ruth he's going into the office, but he instead goes to the convenience store where Natalie works. The two speak briefly, but Matt begins to become emotional, so he leaves. He goes fishing and badly cuts his right index finger, hauling lobster traps. The tension between Matt and Ruth increases when their lawyer informs them that the lack of an eyewitness to Frank's shooting means Richard will instead be charged with accidental manslaughter and will likely only serve 5 to 10 years in prison. Ruth is openly distraught by this. Matt seems deflated. He and Willis spend the evening drinking and lamenting about the injustice of the situation. Natalie approaches Ruth at work and attempts to apologize, but Ruth slaps her before dismissively returning to her papers. Natalie leaves in tears. Later that same day, Ruth accidentally runs into Richard again while buying cigarettes. When she returns home, an argument erupts between the couple in which each one confronts and emotionally savages the other. Matt lambastes Ruth for being an overbearing presence in Frank's youth, while Ruth in turn chastises Matt for showing little grief for their deceased son. A little girl knocks on the door, interrupting them, and Matt buys $10 worth of chocolate. He returns, measured now, and apologizes to Ruth, who apologizes in return, and, breaking down, tells Matt about seeing Natalie and Richard. The two embrace, with the air cleared, the couple is finally able to find common ground in their grief. Matt then abducts Richard at gunpoint, saying he's arranged for Richard to jump bail and leave the state so as to spare them the pain of seeing him in Camden. He forces Richard to pack clothes for warm weather and plants a train schedule in his apartment. He forces Richard to drive them out to the Grinnell cabin, where Willis is waiting with another vehicle. He begins to load Richard's belongings, but Matt hesitates and then shoots Richard once in the shoulder and twice in the back. I feel like it was a lot more than that.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, it was. Killing him. Willis is shocked, admonishing Matt for not following the plan. Matt responds simply that he couldn't wait. The two successfully bury Richard's body deep in the woods beyond the cabin, but are stuck unexpectedly at a bridge crossing on their return home. Willis laments that this cost them nearly an hour, meaning they arrive back in town just after sunrise at 4 a.m., instead of in darkness at 3 a.m., and Matt apologizes. Matt returns home and wraps his clothes in an old blanket before washing himself in the downstairs sink. He returns to the bedroom upstairs to find Ruth awake and smoking in bed. She asks him, "Did you do it?" Matt appears troubled and unresponsive. He climbs into bed and then turns away from her. She asks if he's okay, and Matt haltingly describes a photo he saw in Richard's apartment of him with Natalie in a loving pose, but cannot explain why it affected him. Finally, Ruth gets up to make coffee. Matt rolls over onto his back and removes the band-aid from the finger he injured hauling traps, his trigger finger, to examine the healing wound underneath. Ruth calls from the kitchen, "Matt, do you want coffee?" But he doesn't answer. We'll never know if he wanted coffee. The end.
Wow. So yeah, before this, I mentioned that something was spoiled for me in the trailer, and I think it kind of lessened my experience, but it was the fact that Frank dies, the fact that he's killed early on. I was like, why would they show that in the trailer? Like, I get that it is the crux of the movie.
Entirely.
But like, I feel like you could do a good trailer for this kind of tame drama without like showing that, maybe?
You kind of need to.
Yeah.
I don't imagine there's really that much of a point of watching this movie if the murder isn't at least somewhat a surprise.
Yeah.
Because it changes everything. It has like a big gasping moment where when you're watching this, it sets Frank up to be the main character and like maybe some kind of coming of age.
Yeah.
He's growing up, becoming a man. No, he's not. He's becoming a dead man. Mm-hmm. And now the whole movie's about grief when you didn't expect that. If you know he's getting killed in this, it's just boring.
Yes. Which it kind of is. Like, I don't really remember much of this movie. I remember Marissa Tomei getting slapped because that kind of just came out of nowhere. And it makes Ruth look kind of like a bitch, like which she kind of is. And that's why they have a big argument because Matt calls her out for being like that.
Yeah.
But she did. And she does like kind of regret it afterwards. But some of the characters, like especially Ruth, like I didn't really like. Like she was just kind of awful. And I know that she's grieving, but like she was just kind of like, I don't know. I didn't really vibe with it.
I mean, I think it paints a pretty good picture of why you just kind of need to deal with the trauma that you go through because it paints Ruth as a bad person for how she acts because she's not trying to grieve in a healthy way.
Yeah.
And I think in fairness, Natalie's character shouldn't have just blindsided that mom when she was at work to have that conversation. I think that's the kind of thing that you reach out with like, hey, if you want to talk, we can. But I'm not just going to show up and start talking to you about it unannounced because that's a lot. That is unpacking a bag that might need to stay closed for a bit.
Yeah.
I will say, like, even though there were a lot of very good acting performances, whoever played the priest was either so bad at acting that that character is terrible or is such an astronomically good actor that they portrayed a crappy, boring priest really well. And I can't tell what it was, but I hated watching him either way.
Yeah. And I mean, like Richard was also just kind of like, he was good in terms of like just being an awful human being that he just hated.
Doesn't seem like that hard of a role though.
Totally.
There's just so much of this movie that wasn't particularly remarkable.
Yeah.
And I think all you can really say is that this has good acting at parts, but it's not an action-packed storyline. Yeah. The height of tension is when that murder happens, which completely changes the movie.
Yeah.
But after that, you're just kind of following around grieving parents, unhealthily working through that. And that doesn't make a very exciting movie, even though I think there is some intrigue to it. And I didn't hate my time watching it.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know what to say about it afterwards. That's kind of all I feel about it.
I mean, like, it is competently made. Like, this is a very strong directorial debut effort from Todd Field. Like, you can tell, like, he's really got ability behind the camera. And the fact that he was able to get some great performances out of his actors, granted, a lot of them are really great actors on their own and can bring a lot to that material. But like, he's got a lot of say in like how they're performing, and especially with Tom Wilkinson's character to be so reserved, but also just kind of to portray how he's grieving and like what he's showing. Like, there's a lot to that that like I respect in terms of the craft. I just found that the story itself was kind of boring.
Yeah.
And like, there's that killing moment is quite shocking because they do actually show like his face, being like
what's
mangled.
Left of
I was
it.
Like, geez, like, is this the type of movie that we're kind of in for? Like, is this kind of going to show like the shock and horror aspect of senseless killing?
Yeah.
Because especially with a short story called Killings, you know, maybe you would expect a little
multiple,
more killing.
That is killing plural, not killed.
Yeah. And I mean, there is killings in terms of two people do get killed, but like, I thought that there would maybe be a little bit more shock to like the violence, but it was kind of just that moment. And so because that was so early, maybe it set up a poor expectation of what I was anticipating, but then it was just kind of like a drama after that. And so,
Like, it had a chance to go a bunch of different ways there. It could have been some like Punisher-esque story about the dad getting gruesome vengeance because somehow this guy now is minions or something, or it's about him killing more people, but it just kind of becomes a relationship drama. And I don't even think a bad one. Like, even though I do think it was a boring movie, I don't think it was boring in a bad way that it didn't execute what it wanted. I think that's what it wanted to be, was just about the relationships, and it did that well. Yeah. It just wasn't for me because of that.
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. And I think that there's a lot of people that will have that same experience where it's not for them because of just the nature of this movie in itself. But then like, this movie could just be totally up your alley. Like if you really appreciate a good, hearty, meaty drama that's really an actor's movie, like, you would probably be all over this. And I, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just didn't necessarily vibe with us.
This could be really good background noise if you're eating clam chowder. If you just want to listen to Maine accents for however long the movie is while you're chowing down, this is the one for you. Don't look up when the guy gets shot, though. That's going to ruin that chowder.
All right, well, what do you think other people thought about this, critics and audiences?
I'm going to assume that it has a pretty split, probably heavily favoring critics because it's well made, but I don't think it's going to get that high. I think it's going to do like critics 84, audiences 78.
It's actually got a 93 from critics.
Oh, wow.
And an 81 from audiences.
That was close.
So, 7.4 IMDb, Metacritic 86. So, yes, definitely critics eating this up. Audiences, to a degree, yes, but less so than the critics. On a budget of $1.7 million.
That's
very
impressive.
Very reasonable.
I did not know that. Did not expect that.
It made $42 million. So on the budget, quite a good return.
That's not, again, also directorial debut is quite something.
It was actually 79th at this year's box office and apparently the 54th leggiest movie of all time, being in theaters for 25 weeks.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's kind of came out and held on for a long time. So it is kind of a movie that probably spread based off of word of mouth. Like, I can't see the trailer for this drawing that many people in.
Yeah.
But once you kind of hear, and especially after the Oscars, it probably was like, oh, like, you should check out this movie. Because if it came out in November and Oscars are in February, 25 weeks, like, people came after the Oscars for sure.
That's probably all post-Oscars because that's no advertising budget.
No, totally. 1.7 million. Like, even in 2001, that's nothing.
That is absolutely nothing.
Yeah. But more importantly, what do we think of this movie? What are our scores?
That's a great question. Kyle, we're going to kick it over to you for your enjoyment score.
I gave this a 2. I think that might be a little harsh in times, but like, overall, like, I really didn't enjoy my experience coming out of it. Was I okay being there? Yes. But like just being okay being there doesn't really say that I enjoyed it. Yeah. So that's a two.
I'm going 2.5, and I wholeheartedly believe that 0.5 was probably the difference of me not knowing that he dies going into it, and you already knew that, because that at least had some suspense. And I think when I look back at it, I was watching the movie actively, which gives it an average movie score.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Totally.
What's your craft?
I had a 3.5. I'm actually going to give this a 4. I think it was very well made. They really worked the camera well. It was well edited. I think it was really competently made for, especially a first time feature director. So I'm giving it a 4.
Yeah, I'm going to be right there with you. I can't imagine giving this a 5, even though it is so well made. Yeah. So I'm going to give it a 4. I can't think of much to dock it. It just didn't blow me away enough to be higher than that. Execution.
I gave it a 3.5. Very, very well acted, especially by those kind of 2.5. Like Marissa Tomei is a lead, but she's not in it actually as much as maybe you might think. But they were all really good. Tom Wilkinson, Sissy Spacek were all really good. It's just the story being a little bit slow. Like, I don't think it needed to be over 2 hours.
No.
That kind of docks on the writing element of it. So yeah, 3.5.
Yeah. I'm kind of torn where this was executed very well.
Yeah.
But that's not a very high ceiling to hit. They just played the ever-loving shit out of what they had. But they didn't have much. So I think I'm going to even that out to 4. And it'll be on the strength of the main characters. Oh, boy. Have fun. Kyle, what's your rewatchability?
This is a 1. I do not think I will ever come back to this movie. If I saw it on in like a dentist's office, I would probably look at my phone. So,
yep, I have nothing to add. I agree.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, that is going to bring your score to a 10.5 out of 20 for a 53%. And mine will be 11.5 out of 20 for a 58%. In terms of rankings, Kyle, right now you have Donnie Darko, Memento, Royal Tenenbaums, Shrek, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, and then Ghost World. Where is In the Bedroom?
In the Bedroom is my new number 9 over Ghost World, under Gosford Park. I think I just like this one a little bit more than Ghost World, but less than Gosford Park, which is also not a great. I didn't have a great time with that one. So
I think I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to put this as my new number 7, which is going to be above Spy Kids, below Ocean's 11. That's going to bring my ranking to Donnie Darko, Royal Tenenbaums, Shrek, Memento, Harry Potter, Ocean's 11, In the Bedroom, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World. I don't know, something I didn't, because it was so well made.
Yeah.
It felt wrong putting it below the children's movie Spy Kids.
That's
but
fair.
I don't know. I might have been looking fishing too hard here. Yeah. So this could be a changer up later, but I think that's right for now.
Yeah. No, totally. That's fair. Well, do you want to get into Letterboxd reviews?
I'd love to. I'm curious if it has some.
No.
And on to the next section.
Yeah, this was a really barren Letterboxd reviews. I expected it to kind of be that, though, with this type of movie. And also when there are under 1,300 reviews on Letterboxd for this movie. So not a lot of attention, but we got 3. I got a 4 stars by Sam. At one point, Cecilia Weston explains what a Disney World Fast Pass is to Sissy Spacek, automatic masterpiece. So, Jason, did you get any enjoyment out of knowing what the Disney World Fast Pass is after being in Disney World?
Here's the thing. No, because they got rid of the Fast Pass system for a paid system. And if you are a YouTube head who's watched Defunctland's video on the Disney Fast Pass system, and you know the beauty, the grace that this has given the world and how insanely efficient that system was and what it is now, hearing them explain the Fast Pass is a triggering event that reminds you of the world we had, the world we could have. The fact that Fast Pass has been taken out of the world is a bigger travesty than Frank getting shot. We lost more from the Fast Pass than those parents did of their child, and I stand by that statement.
Oh, good. I was so glad I included that because it was about Disney World Fast Pass and you had just been to Disney World.
I know.
Like, it's relevant.
What are the chances of that?
All right. Now the next two are the lower ones. Half a star by Lex. There are multiple murders in this movie, and yet I was still the most bored I've ever been watching a movie in a long time.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
And last one, 1.5 stars by Sedona Blue. Controlling woman works as a choir director. Man takes off Band-Aid to reveal healed wound after avenging his murdered son. Lobster anatomy explained early on. What?
Oh, that's good. I don't think his wound was actually healed, though. I thought that was the point, that it didn't heal him to shoot that guy.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't. It looked healed. Maybe.
Yeah, who knows?
Maybe this is a big ad for Band-Aids.
Yeah.
Like, look how great we can heal.
We can't bring your son back, but here's your finger again.
All right. Academy Awards. So I'm assuming that this is probably where a lot of the attention was given to this movie. It was nominated for 5 Academy Awards. Jason, other than Best Picture, which is one of them, what do you think the other 4 were?
Was Sissy Best Supporting?
She was a Best Actress. She was a lead.
Best Actress. Okay, I wasn't sure. Yeah. So I'm assuming she was getting, a nomination for Best Actress.
Yes.
Maybe the guy for Best Actor?
He did. Tom Wilkinson was nominated for Best Actor.
I want to say Best Director.
No.
Oh, I bet you if there was a best new director, though, like if there was a rookie category that you got to imagine beyond that cinematography.
No,
I don't know what else it has. There.
It got best supporting actress for Marissa Tomei.
OK, I thought she would also be considered lead. But that's fair.
And best adapted screenplay.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So far, every time something has had a best adapted screenplay attached to it that wasn't Shrek, I've thought weird. But when that happens enough, it means there was nothing stronger, so it starts making sense again.
Yeah, there's not a lot in adapted screenplay this year, I think. This was actually the only film in this year to be Academy Award nominated for both Best Actor and Best Actress.
Interesting.
And additionally, it is the only Best Picture nominee for 2001 that did not win any of its nominations. So it was nominated for 5 and won none.
You know, I'm okay with that. Yeah. I'm not about to pick up the torch in the name of In the Bedroom.
Other notable awards. Sissy Spacek was nominated for a bunch of acting awards, including the BAFTA, Golden Globe, and Screen Actors Guild Award. She did win the BAFTA. Similarly, Tom Wilkinson was nominated for a bunch of awards, including the BAFTA and the Screen Actors Guild. He didn't win any major awards, though. So basically, acting was nominated a lot across this movie, but not a lot of winning. So interesting.
I think that's just the limitation of the roles they were in.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Similar to Letterboxd, Interesting Facts is very, very slim. I got 4 here. No, I got 3 here. Sorry. There were 15 takes of Sissy Spacek slapping Marissa Tomei. The final version in the film was the first take.
Oh my God. Her face must have been redder than a tomato. Oh
my God. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This somehow counts as interesting. Sissy Spacek decorated the house in which her character lives. I guess the budget couldn't afford a set decorator.
I was about to say, they probably all dressed themselves as well.
Yeah. And lastly, one of the major reasons why the film got made was because Todd Field agreed to waive his directing fee. Oh. So he made no money off of this.
Well, I can't imagine if anyone made any money off that with that small of a budget.
Yeah.
I think your daily stipend just get a little craft food services, and I think that's $950,000, and you need to still film it.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of explains to me why the budget is probably so low, but also he's a first-time director, so probably just wanted to get, especially when you're working with great actors like Tom Wilkinson and Sissy Spacek, you want to get this off the ground.
This had to have been one of history's few occasions of doing something for the exposure actually paying off, because he probably had a green light after this.
Well, one interesting fact that's not related to this movie, but is related to this fact. Did you know that James Cameron didn't earn any money off of Titanic?
I didn't know that.
So it got to a point where the movie was way too long and the studio was like, you need to trim this down. We're not doing a 3-hour movie. No. And he was like, fuck you. I'm doing this 3-hour movie. I will waive my fee if you at least let me have control over this. Mm-hmm. So he didn't make any money off of Titanic and got what he wanted. He got the movie that he wanted. So, one of the highest grossing movies of all time, and he made no money off of it.
It's crazy that there's nothing in the universe where people who were wrong will then try to be like, okay, I was incorrect, I'm going to pay you now.
Yeah.
Because Titanic famously made money. Yes. So you'd think at some point when the executives are all drowning in their own cold, hard cash, one of them would stop to think, maybe we should give Cameron something for this. He was right. never probably did that ever cross a mind.
Or and maybe it did. They were like, maybe we should pay Cameron.
Yeah.
Nah.
And then it got slapped in the face with another stack of $100 bills back to his greed senses. Yep. Like, oh, never mind. Let's charge him for making us this movie.
Yeah. And then I think it just kind of paid off because then he was able to do Avatar to the extent that he was able to and get paid. And I think he also got a percentage of the gross of Avatar. So he's like, don't have to feel bad. He's a very wealthy man.
That's true. There's no need to defend him here, but that is just such an injustice.
Yeah. So, wow. Titanic facts are it's our spicing up in the picture. So, well, any final thoughts on In the Bedroom?
Well, Kyle, I've heard this a lot about In the Bedroom. It needs spicing up. That's my last thought on that.
Oh, well, we'll leave it at that. I can't top that. So I want to thank you guys all for listening to season 3, episode 10 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on In the Bedroom or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter and Jason is a Windy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
I've been coming here for damn near 11 years, and I'm tired. Only reason I'm here so you can say goodbye to your son.
Lionsgate Home Entertainment proudly presents Academy Award winner Billy Bob Thornton.
Do you know what you did? You should have done it. So quit!
Academy Award winner Halle Berry.
Who are you?
My name is Letitia Musgrove. Me and Hank is friends.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Monsters Ball. It sounds like a Halloween movie, but it's not.
It does. Or a movie about neutering.
Okay. I think that's Monsters Balls, Jesus. All right, well, make sure to watch that movie before next episode. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.